Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology. This is April 27th. I'm opening a work session on two items. The first is Oregon Department of Administrative Services. Mr. McSpadden.
Certainly. Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, since you've opened the work session, we're going to go ahead and switch. Bob Cummings is the official analyst for the Department of Administrative Services, and he's been overseeing the Human Resource Information System project, and he'll come up and give an overview of the project and invite the presenters up.
Thank you. And while Mr. Cummings is coming to the table here, we will have to perhaps abbreviate any testimony that was prepared. We have approximately 20 minutes to hear a presentation. I don't know if it will take that long. That includes your words as well.
Being a man of few words, I'll have no problem doing that.
Thank you. And that will leave a few minutes for questions and discussion that the committee may want to have before we entertain a motion.
Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bob Cummings. I'm with the Legislative Fiscal Officer Office. As described in the LFO analysis and recommendations memo posted on OLIS, the Department of Administrative Services has submitted a request to the Joint Committee of Ways and Means for implementation resources for the HRIS Human Resources Information System project during the 2017-19 biennium. This request, policy option package number 100 with the agency's budget bill HB 5002, includes a proposed $18,481,131 increase in other funds expenditure limitation paid through DAS assessments to agencies. The agency expects ongoing costs for the new system to be approximately $2.6 million per year. The request also seeks to establish 27 limited duration and three permanent full-time positions to implement and manage the system. That would be 30.00/26.50 FTEs. The purpose of this request is to provide the implementation resources DAS needs to proceed with the execution phase, which is post-stage gate 3 of the stage gate review process of the HRS project, which expects to develop, configure, and implement the new software as a service human resource information system solution by December 2018. The DAS CHRO sponsors for the project are here today to provide an overview of the project and the requested resource requirements. If the DAS folks could please come forward, and please remember to introduce yourself for the record.
You can go ahead and sit down and start talking.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Riley and Nathanson, members of the committee, Legislative Fiscal Office staff. For the record, my name is Lisa Sumption. I'm the Director of Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, a member of the Enterprise Leadership Team, and the co-sponsor with Madeline Zeich here today to give you a brief overview. For the sake of time and to be respectful of your time limitations today, this presentation we have today is the same presentation we brought to you on the 6th, so we thought we would just spend more time clarifying questions, going over any concerns you had or any clarifying pieces, and then literally just kind of talk about the project update since we were last together 2 weeks ago and answer more questions for you. So with that, we told you last time this is our system. It's not antiquated. It's just very well loved. And we'd love to start using something a little different. If you want to go to the next slide. We also described what the manual paperwork, we kind of joked a little bit about having you actually go into the screen and enter a personnel action so you could feel the full experience, but we decided our pain was probably enough for that. So unless you had questions about the current system and kind of the why we're going to where we're going, I'm going to turn it over to Madeline to talk about what's changed since we were together a couple weeks ago.
Is that okay? Are we ready to just move? Thank you.
Okay. Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Nathanson and Riley, members of the committee, Mr. Cummings. I'm Madeline Zeich. I'm the Chief Human Resources Officer for the state, and I'm one of the co-sponsors of this project. And we promised to be brief, but I think this slide is just really exciting, at least to us, when it says all of these areas have now been completed after about 3 years of planning. Our planning efforts have finally gotten to the point where we are ready to request moving forward. We went over this last time, and really the update to this slide is that since we met, I think we had just gotten the Oracle assessment completed and approved by the OSCIO while we were here, but we also got Stage Gate 3 approval approved from the OSCIO, which was critical to us moving forward. A little bit about our timeline. We went over this last time with you. Again, the updates are that we have completed the fit gap, which was required to move forward. We received the Stage Gate 3 endorsement. We're here today with our second presentation to you, and we're in the midst of contract negotiations with IBM and Workday for the software as a solution product. And upon potential approval of the project, we're ready to begin in July. A little bit about our project execution timeline. As you see, we have a go-live scheduled for June, and then we have 3 months of post-implementation support. One of the things that we found, you may remember from our last presentation, was that was an item that was included when we looked at best practices with other systems, and so we've included that period of time beyond our go-live. And then as a reminder, we're looking to change our business practices to fit the software. It is a SaaS solution, but we also know there are about 43 business processes that really need to be changed, and so that's part of our strategy to minimize risk and make sure that we're using the system based on best practice.
I'm going to interrupt for a moment here. Could you give me an example of one business process that you will change to match the software?
Representative Nathanson, members of the committee, there are a number of them, but for example, our recruitment process. Our recruitment process is very cumbersome right now for anybody that's applied for a job with the state. We have an antiquated process where people fill out job applications, traditional job applications, and in this competitive market, normally you're able to provide a resume, which kind of parses into the system. So that's one of the places that we'll be improving it. And I think additionally, one of the things that is important is that we will now be in a position to actually give people data to manage their workforce. Right now, even though our system is well-loved, we don't really have the data to help managers and supervisors see what's going on with their workforce, who's leaving, what does retention look like, what do our recruitment processes look like. But that's one example of how things might change.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. We talked about, Mr. Cummings talked about the costs. These haven't changed since April 6th. As we've gone through our fit gap, we don't anticipate any increases in the costs that I'd have to be talking to you about today. And we talked last time just about the risks. Those haven't changed since April 6th. And with that, that's pretty much the rest of the remainder of our presentation that we have today in the interest of time, other than I think what Ms. Sumption wanted to talk about our future state and what it might look like.
Yes. Before you do that, could you please back up one slide? This may be, yes, thank you. Could you explain to me the attribution in the toward the bottom right corner by Gan Kun Lei of the Noun Project?
Representative Nathanson, members of the committee, that's just giving credit to the image.
Oh, the image
the
itself.
The image itself.
Not the work contracted out for that slide. Just the image.
We just didn't want to have any copyright issues by using the
Thank
picture.
You. I'm really glad you're doing the right thing.
You think with that one they could steal some from ODOT, right?
But thank you for reading it.
Yes, and Representative Nierman had an also interesting comment.
I thought you could just steal it from ODOT. So they probably have an image there.
They may have a better one, even.
They probably do. They probably do. So did you want to go
back? And so really, we talked about this last time. This is just kind of that future state. This would be one of the other challenges and changes that would be there is as a current employee or a person applying for a state position, you would have a record that would stay with you. So think about it, any other social media account that you have, you don't have to go change your information every time you go to your bank and use your online banking. You would have like a digital record that would come with you. You could do it by a phone, tablet, computer. So it just brings us a little bit more into to the current date to be a little more attractive from that perspective. So that's with that, that's really our presentation, and we're happy to answer more questions or take comments or turn it over to Mr. Cummings.
Thank you very much. Representative Nierman.
So I just have a couple of questions. So maybe Mr. Cummings went over this, but when are you planning on signing a contract then, or at least a good...
Representative Nierman, we need to wait until we have the legislative approval of the funding before we can sign a contract. So we're assuming the assumed date in the project plan is around July.
Don't you sign a contract saying pending legislative funding, though? I mean, can't you speed that up by doing it that way, or is that normal? I'm not a procurement guy, so I don't know.
So from what I understand from our procurement folks, that would not be something that we would be allowed to do. We need to wait until the funding's approved.
Interesting. Can I one more?
Okay.
So then once you do sign the contract, there's probably quite a bit of training that has to go on with this. When does that start with employees?
Your timeline.
Yep.
Could you have it all in there?
We do have that all in there.
Chair Nathanson, Representative Nierman, our training will start somewhere early on in the project for the project team. So there's a component of the training that's related to scaling up the project team so that they can go out. There's a significant change management process in this. I think that's what you're referring to.
No, actually, I'm referring to the end users.
Okay. So the training, I'm looking here. It's not outlined in here, but it'd be toward the end of the implementation. One of my staff back here, details?
Right before the deploy.
Right before the deploy.
Okay. So March to May.
March to May. And that would be traditionally how we do it.
Good, thanks.
But there are two pieces of the training. I wanted to make sure that was clear.
The development team and then the project team and then the end users. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Other questions? Discussion? Yes, Senator.
If I could just follow up on that last question. That seems late to me. And typically when I start training on a project is just about the time that the parallel testing is being done. And part of the parallel testing, in my opinion, could be those end users doing some of that parallel testing.
Chair Nathanson, Senator Riley, that is part of the strategy in bringing in that group early for testing. So the end users would be part of that initial testing that I was referring to, not only for our project team, which is the 17 or 20 that we have, but also bringing in end users. That's been part of this project, was to begin bringing end users to the table. They've been really involved in the fit gap. So
I see a lot of nodding in the back.
So. Oh, good. So.
They will be part of the testing.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Anything else? Could we have a motion?
Of course. Madam Co-Chair, I move adoption of the LFO recommendation.
You need to give the recommendation.
Yes.
Would you Co-Chairs, please? Members of the committee. As more fully described in the detailed recommendations made on page 5 of the memo posted on OLIS, based upon the HRS project's due diligence conducted to date, the OSCIO Stage Gate 3 endorsement, the LFO readiness and ability assessment, LFO recommends approval of the agency's execution phase resource request, assuming that funding, spending authority, and personnel resources are made available to the agency by the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay.
Discussion.
Any objections to the motion? Motion passes. That one's done. Thank you.
Thank you.
I am opening a work session on Department of Transportation. Mr. McSpadden.
Yes. Give me just one moment. Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, as we've described in the LFO analysis and recommendations memo that we posted for this project on OLIS, within Senate Bill 5540, Policy Option Package 110, the Oregon Department of Transportation, Driver and Motor Vehicle Services Division has made a 2017-19 request in the amount of $27 million. This, if I'm not mistaken, is a limitation request. Is that correct? Great. The resources that have been requested will be used in conjunction with about $18 million in the DMV's base budget to begin implementation of the Service Transformation Program. The Service Transformation Program is ultimately intended to improve DMV services to partner agencies and the public, to streamline DMV business processes, to achieve operational efficiencies, and to upgrade and replace obsolete technology that in many cases was originally designed and deployed in the 1960s and 70s. The agency is here today to provide an overview of the program and to answer any questions that the committee may have. Gentlemen, please introduce yourself for the record before you begin presenting.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom McClellan. I'm the DMV administrator.
And co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ben Kahn, transformation manager with DMV.
So we're going to tag team through this and kind of go back and forth a little bit. Thank you for inviting us to appear today. We know there are new members on the committee. So in addition to providing an update on our progress with our service transformation program, which we'll invariably call STP at some point during this presentation, we want to quickly review some of the reasons why this transformation is so important to the future of DMV and the people in the organizations that we serve. So we'll touch on that as quickly as we can, and move into where we're at and kind of where we're going next.
So based on a consultant's report in 2013, DMV developed a strategy for business process transformation and system modernization. And the business case identified many shortcomings of the current system, such as error-prone, paper-centric manual processes, which are complex and difficult to control or prevent errors. We have inadequate financial management tools, which is concerning since DMV is a major resource, a revenue source for Oregon's transportation system. We have antiquated document management, including our use of microfilm, batch processing, and many manual processes. Our systems are difficult to use and maintain, and our employees with in-depth knowledge and skills are retiring. We have few online services that are available to our customers, and our customers want more online services, and this affects customer satisfaction. It's also expensive to change our legacy systems. We see high fiscal impacts for new legislation resulting from the hours of programming that goes into what seems like a simple change, and it's difficult for us to comply with federal requirements. So in short, DMV can't serve customers as well as it would like to because we're saddled with inefficient business processes and obsolete technology. So a picture is worth a thousand words, so we want to show you a short video that gives you an idea of what it takes for our division to serve the people of Oregon.
Each morning, staff members at ODOT's DMV headquarters receive, open, sort, and route about 100,000 documents, such as vehicle titles and forms, in a paper-intensive and time-consuming process. In a typical day, DMV archives 47,000 documents using ancient microfilm machines. 850 DMV employees spread across 60 field offices, headquarters, and call centers serve thousands of daily customers and answer thousands of phone calls per day, all while using tools that are archaic by computer standards. And it's not just ODOT employees and customers who have to deal with these legacy systems. DMV daily receives 20,000 convictions, suspensions, and other actions by courts, data vital to law enforcement officers, but using court technology first designed in 1966. Today, DMV programmers still work with ancient programming languages like COBOL to maintain applications written nearly a half century ago. It's a time-consuming and expensive process to make even simple improvements and updates mandated by changes in state and federal driver licensing and vehicle laws. And none of these applications are capable of connecting to today's mobile devices. Further, the skill set for maintaining and updating DMV's computer system is an endangered species. 40% of DMV's information systems crew is eligible to retire today, and most of the rest in 5 years. For these and many other reasons, it's vital for Oregon to upgrade its DMV systems soon. It's more than a computer upgrade. DMV needs to modernize the way it serves its customers and in the ways today's customers expect. Here are some examples of what we'd like to accomplish. More transactions available online, which are now done in the field office or by mail. Mobile device access and transactions. More convenient and faster service for customers. More efficient and accurate completion of transactions. And ongoing system updates that are faster, simpler, and less expensive. DMV can be successful with this program, which will affect every area of the organization. Currently, mountains of documents travel back and forth at DMV headquarters as they go from section to section for processing. In the future, electronic bits and bytes will replace paper on metal carts, ushering driver and vehicle records at the speed of light. It isn't as easy as installing a new software program, though. The DMV will have to clean up a lot of old records contained on microfilm, microfiche, and in outdated computer databases. Chunked up in manageable parts over nearly a decade, DMV's service transformation program will overhaul processes and systems born in the 1960s and bring them into the 21st century with online capability, improved service, more convenience, fewer trips to DMV offices, and be more efficient in making future updates and improvements to our services.
So the technology that is in use today at DMV is over 40 years old. It was put in place in the late 1960s and early 1970s, and it's being used behind DMV counters by staff that were not even born in the 60s and 70s, yet they're using this old technology. This is an image of one of the screens that we use to conduct transactions at your local DMV office. And I checked with our IS manager.
Behind the wheel with a suspended license. I knew that was going to happen. Oregon's DMV have a lot of explaining to do.
Yeah. Hi, Linda, Clive, and Bob, you've uncovered a...
We'll talk about that later. Okay. So this is one of our more elegant screens that we have in use at our DMV field offices. And the technology that DMV uses today has exceeded its lifespan. Our team of dedicated coders and COBOL specialists work hard to keep the system up and running, but responding quickly to changing laws and policies is difficult and time-consuming due to the complexity of our system. There are over 3 million lines of code that DMV must maintain that support our four large mainframe systems, each with many supporting systems. In all, there are more than 2,400 computer programs in use at DMV today. That makes it possible for us to serve our customers. So in addition to the difficulties in using such outdated systems, our current technology also creates issues when staffing our IS positions. 44% of our DMV IS staff are eligible to retire today, and finding candidates who have COBOL experience is difficult as it's no longer taught in computer science programs any longer.
Mm-hmm.
I know, Representative Nierman, you have some experience in COBOL, so...
No, that's me.
That's you, right? Senator Riley, so we
I
may need your
I wrote a COBOL textbook. You can have it if you want.
Okay. Great. That might help. So taking the time now to replace...
There's no problem with the gift value.
No, not at all. That was just plain mean.
So taking the time now to replace DMV's aging systems with a more updated and agile web-based COT solution will, one, create a DMV that is better equipped to change, two, make it easier to train employees to use our systems in the future, and three, be the tool we need to meet the expectations of our customers.
I'm going to give you a moment to catch your breath and observe. Could you please back up to the previous screen? Even though I feel very comfortable and friendly looking at a screen like this, I'm assuming that Representative Klemm might look forward to a time when DMV isn't promoting a green and yellow color scheme.
Yeah. Orange and black would have been fine. But...
So an immense amount of planning and preparation work has been completed this biennium, and I want to go over some of the highlights. DMV contracted with a vendor to document 165 business processes to capture DMV's current functionality in addition to desired features for our new computer system. This list provided critical input to the scope of work required to procure a system solution vendor. With the help of more than 100 subject matter experts from many areas of DMV and ODOT, the project team and vendor staff spent over 800 hours on this project. The team identified more than 2,000 business requirements, which were included in the RFP for an IS solution vendor. The team also created as-is process maps for key DMV business processes, and these maps will be used to identify future changes in business processes, help us redesign workflows, and create employee training materials. We also learned from talking with other states that not having your data prepared for the software vendor could be a roadblock to success. So DMV IS employees have been working diligently to check DMV's database content for accuracy, consistency, and completeness. Data formats, issues, anomalies have been identified to assist with the data migration that will occur once the COTS vendor is ready for data conversion. We have also spent considerable time preparing the DMV website for the transformation, and this includes participating in the ODOT Web Reinvention Project, converting content to plain language, and ensuring the website is designed with a mobile-first perspective. In January of this year, we entered into a contract with an organizational change leadership vendor to help us create and execute a comprehensive organizational change management plan through the life of the program. This will help prepare our employees for change and lead them through change. And this is a best practice in program success and was identified as an important factor by our independent quality assurance vendor. So our organizational change leadership vendor will work with our staff and with us to prepare our staff for the changes. And we're committed to supporting our employees through this change. We have committed to employees that those willing to learn new skills or even take a new job at DMV will continue to find employment with the agency. And also much of the 2015-17 biennial activity focused on putting in place structures to inform and support the work of the IT solution vendor who will provide the commercial off-the-shelf software that will replace our legacy systems. STP is procuring a proven solution, which means that only vendors with success in other jurisdictions installing both a driver and vehicle system met the special requirements of the RFP. A thorough evaluation process included vendor staff interviews, visits to jurisdictions where the product is in use, like in New Mexico and Arkansas, and finally, the vendor needed to ensure that their proposal met DMV's business requirements.
The second point you have on that screen about legacy system data, I was making a little note to the LFO analyst, and I wrote down the letters GIGO. How many of you know what that is, or is that really dating me back to the COBOL era?
We all know what that is.
Well, Co-Chair Nathanson and Riley, I didn't. I was born in 1968 after these systems were put in place.
GIGO stands for garbage in, garbage out.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Yeah. Now I get it.
Bob knew that.
Other key milestones this biennium involve forming a solid project governance structure, including an executive steering committee chaired by ODOT Director Garrett, and a task force comprised of legislators, private sector, CIOs, and others with key perspectives and experience. The task force is chaired by Legislative Fiscal Office staff Sean McSpaden. The program must follow OSCIO StageGate protocols. Our team is working closely with the OSCIO and LFO analysts on the StageGate approval process. We are finalizing the documentation needed to receive StageGate 3 approval, which, as you know, must be in place before we can finalize the contract with the COT solution vendor. We believe the organization is as ready as possible to engage with the COTS vendor in the heavy lifting that comes with configuring new systems, redesigning business workflows and procedures, and preparing employees and customers for the changes that this represents. In January, DAS issued an intent to award to FAST Enterprises. FAST has a complete integrated commercial off-the-shelf COTS system with driver and vehicle components that has been implemented successfully in 9 other states. We are currently in contract negotiations and on the cusp of signing a contract to launch the first rollout of the new system. Because this is still an open procurement, we can't talk specifics about the contract at this time, but what we can share with you is that it will be a deliverable-based contract, not time and materials. As part of the evaluation process, our staff went to New Mexico and Arkansas, where the proposed solution was in use. Both of these states completed their own transformation to replace old legacy systems similar to Oregon. These states achieved positive outcomes. In fact, our evaluation team arrived in New Mexico the day after their first phase of their new driver system launched. They were happy to have us there right at the time that they launched their new system. And we have followed the launch of FAST systems in other states during our evaluation period, and early signs are promising. For example, New Mexico reports an increase in efficiency with significantly reduced customer wait times after the first phase rollout in June of 2016. Procuring a proven solution is a goal of STP. Purchasing a commercial off-the-shelf product means that we will configure the system to meet our needs and not spend time and money creating a custom system from scratch. We may need to adjust our business processes to take advantage of the new technology, and we are prepared to do that. As part of the evaluation process, we shared our more than 2,000 detailed business requirements with FAST and made it clear that their product must be able to deliver that functionality. By purchasing a system that we already know works in other jurisdictions and that we already know meets our needs, we can focus our time, money, and energy into putting the system into place and training our staff on how to use it and not worrying if it will work when we turn the switch on.
Can I suggest that you maybe press the space bar or something to advance the points on the slide?
Oh.
Thank you.
Yeah. I knew I'd forget that. This new technology. It's difficult. Yeah. So although this program will take up to 10 years to complete, that doesn't mean we won't use the product until 2025. If a contract is signed soon, work would begin right away to install and configure the initial system rollout to meet DMV's needs and preferences. We will have a more solid timeline for specific phases of the new system once we finish the procurement process. We plan to begin with the vehicle system. We do know that it takes 18 to 24 months to install each component of the system. There'll be vehicles and there'll be drivers. We plan to start with vehicles because of its criticality for revenue collection and share of overall business transactions. As new needs are identified or as the vendor makes improvements to the product, DMV will update the system with new versions or releases similar to how you would download the latest operating system on your smartphone. Another advantage of replacing our legacy systems with modern technology is the many systems to which we can now connect. We will be able to connect to a centralized database of VIN numbers to protect vehicle ownership, as well as the new state-to-state system that allows us to see if an individual has a driver's license in another state. Interfaces with our partners, like state police, will also improve so that they can have real-time data and information. We need legislative assurance of adequate funding for 2017-19 biennium before we sign a contract to move forward in earnest. I'll turn the time over to Tom to talk about Real ID.
And we recognize that compliance with the federal Real ID has been a topic of interest, and we've been asked a number of times how that, if a policy decision is made for Oregon to comply, how that might relate to the service transformation program. So I wanted to address that. First, I think it's important to recognize that Oregon already meets many of the requirements of the federal law and the regulations, and that in our RFP with FAST Enterprises, now being the contractor, close to being that, we've insisted that they replicate whatever functionality we have today in the new system. So we don't anticipate losing any ground toward Real ID compliance as a result of that. The second is that the most substantive areas of noncompliance have to do with technology are really around connectivity to other systems, national systems that, for example, to verify U.S. passports. There is now a system through the State Department that DMVs can access and determine if that is actually a legitimate U.S. passport that's been presented to the person. There is a system now partially developed that DMVs can access for birth certificate information. So especially, in our case, be Oregon vital statistic type information that we can check to see if when that person presents us a birth certificate, there should be a way to verify electronically that there is a birth certificate actually issued to that person for that date of birth. Another system that it's expected we would connect to is a state-to-state system that is to confirm that the person does not have a license or a driver's license or an ID card in another state at the time that they've come into Oregon, that they are giving up that driving privilege or that ID at the time they apply for one in Oregon. That is a requirement of the Real ID Act and a capability we anticipate with the new system being implemented. Adding the Real ID mandated capabilities will avoid thousands of hours of work on our existing legacy systems. And the idea is that we would do it in the second rollout of STP when the driver system is replaced, that we would include those additional functions and linkages to other systems at the time we roll out the new driver system. Timeline for that we estimate to be the summer of 2020. It's about a 3-year time frame, which is coincidentally about the same amount of time we estimate it would take for us to make the changes in our existing systems. So it seemed like a waste of money and time to try to make those changes in the existing legacy systems and just throw the code away, basically. Let's do it with the new system and make it as integrated as we possibly can and as efficient at the point of sale, basically, in a DMV field office. That's our plan. And we'll incorporate the new things in the training of our employees as well as that second rollout goes through. I know at least one state, New Mexico, is a Real ID compliant state, and so when they introduced their driver system, they also gained Real ID compliance from the Federal Department of Homeland Security. So some experience, at least, with this vendor. As far as budget goes, the approved budget for the current biennium, 2015-17, for us was $30.4 million. It included estimates for software acquisitions that we likely knew wouldn't occur in the current biennium. However, it signaled to the vendor community that we were serious, that this legislature was willing to invest in these computer systems, and an amount was out there, a large amount, that really was to encourage the vendors, that community, to submit proposals. And I think in that sense it was successful. We committed to spend, though, only what we needed to lay the groundwork. For example, completing these key vendor procurements that Ben mentioned, hiring and training staff, designing a next-generation database, that data migration, data cleanup work that he mentioned, cataloging our existing key business processes, all those things that we've been doing in preparation for the vendor to come on board so we can really hit the ground running. But our estimated spending out of that 30.4 we could have spent is going to be closer to the $8 to $10 million range. And so you see on the graph there, I've put the higher number there as $10 million is what we estimate. Although the software purchase, if we were fortunate enough to have the contract and assurance of funding to move forward, potentially, if all went well, potentially could be purchased in June in the current budget period. More likely it's going to hit in the next biennium, hit in July or August, and that would be in our next year's expending. So in the governor's recommended budget, we have a total, as committee staff mentioned, $45 million between the positions in the base budget and the package that we have. It's 45. So the estimate is by the end of June of 2019, we will have spent about $55 million of that $90 million that we've committed as a total cost of this series of projects that we're going to undertake.
I have a question about the numbers and
yes.
The cost. 45 is pretty solid because we're just about there. Mm-hmm. How much of the 22 is still speculative? Might that number go up or down by 5 or 10 or 20%?
Chair Nathanson, as we negotiate our contract, we are looking at both phases, both rollouts of the vehicle system and the driver system. So contractually, we're going to have a pretty good sense of the cost of that second rollout. It's really a cash flow issue, ultimately, with a two-year budget cycle to see, is it 45 and 22, or is it going to be 40 and 28? Or, you know, it's going to kind of depend on where we're at in different places. I don't anticipate it to be much higher, but I do want to build into this budget some contingency just in case. So we want to limit the amount of maybe no custom programming on the part of the vendor. That's the reason we're buying a COTS solution. We want something that's been built and that we configure. But we want to make sure we have a little bit extra if necessary. I think we can say pretty confidently the 45 is pretty solid, that we won't spend, we definitely will not spend more than that. And if it is less, it might allow us to do a little bit more planning and preparation for that following biennium, still staying within the 90 in total.
Thank you.
If the schedule for next biennium proves too aggressive, we may delay some things, contract deliverables into the 19-21 time period. This particular vendor has taken 16 to 18 months for major releases in the 9 or 10 other states that they've installed in, and pretty consistently. That's one of the hallmarks of this particular company, is they're staying on schedule. The project budgets are being developed, within that $90 million overall spending limit. Our staffing levels, though, will need to taper off as the major COTS solutions are installed. We'll start planning for downsizing by the end of this next biennium. So you've approved some permanent positions. We're going to start thinking about where those permanent positions go in the organization and the people that are in those. So it'll be a downsizing. We're going to have to start planning here pretty quick, because that burn rate's going to be pretty high. We're going to make sure we bring it down as we get further along, all ensuring that we get the deliverables that we intended from the beginning. Okay. So looking ahead, even though we've talked about this being a 10-year program, it's not going to take 10 years for you to start to see some benefits and for us to see some benefits. The first phase could roll out as early as the end of 2018, with the work on the second component beginning soon after that. The first phase, although it's listed as 2018, it could easily be early 2019. It really depends on when we get started, when the contract's in place and we're really ready to go. That's more of a best case for us right now. It is more than just a technology upgrade, as we've mentioned to you already. We're revamping our business practices. We want to achieve efficiencies. We want to work with our staff to successfully navigate through this change. It's going to change the way our customers and our stakeholders and partners interface with us as well. So there's a lot of preparation that goes into this besides just the technology side of it. But we anticipate coming out on the other side of this as an improved version of today in all aspects of our business and customer service. So we welcome the opportunity to provide updates in the future if you would like. I should assume you probably would. Are there any further questions that we could answer today for you?
Representative Nierman.
So thanks, Madam Chair. So you talked about the hooks that you have into other things, to like the birth certificates or the driver's licenses to other states.
Yes.
So do some of those hooks run both ways? So does that create a hook into your system so that West Virginia can see if somebody has an Oregon driver's license?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Nierman, on the first system you mentioned, the birth certificate, that's a one-way query.
You don't store birth certificates.
There's nothing back to come to check. Yeah. The state-to-state system is more like a pointer system, and so there's some records. So it is a shared system. So other states, as they're issuing in their state, they're also doing a query against other states that are in that system. So there is a return back to them. And so you want as few false positives as possible. It's one reason why the last five digits of the Social Security number are part of that query, which makes some people a little uncomfortable that that's part of that query, but it's not the full number. It's a portion of it to try to limit the number of names of Oregonians that might go back to that other state. But there's a limit to what data they actually can receive. It is truly more like a pointer system in that regard.
Can I follow?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, you can
I'm just looking at the time.
Okay. So if there were to be a problem with some of those API hooks or whatever, would you be able to temporarily abandon those and have the system work if there was a problem with those? Or
Chair Nathanson, I'm not really sure. Any idea?
I don't know the answer to that.
We can research that for you if you'd like.
I'd be interested to know that, and maybe that's a question to ask of the vendor, whatever. But I'm trying to think of Plan B as we get going, mm-hmm. and hopefully we don't get to Plan B. But
okay. Other questions? I'd like to say thank you to whoever did the graphics for this presentation, especially slide 10. And it may be someone who's not sitting in this room, but I liked it. I noticed it, and I can appreciate the work that goes into how do you express a lot of words, but with one image.
Mm-hmm.
It's done effectively here.
But you didn't have the little thing down in the corner to say who did it.
Is the video that's embedded in this presentation, the video that's been prepared since a while ago, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. A year or so. Is that video available on the ODOT website?
Yeah, it's on the DMV website under the Service Transformation Program. So on the left-hand side, you click on Service Transformation Program, and it takes you to a page that has the video on it. It's also on YouTube if you just do a search as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I try to show it to my family, but they won't watch it. So.
And we're not promoting it too much. We're not real proud of the way things look today, but it is a great story, actually.
Yes, it's a good story. Yeah. I plan to refer to it.
So, Madam Chair,
yes,
I didn't want to waste a lot of time on this, but I heard that you're using plain language in some of the things. Are you using the manual the plain language manual that actually is used by all the other agencies for their plain language? Do you have that manual?
I believe we are. We've been trained on how to write in plain language, and we're taking a lot of the information on our website that a lot of times refers to OARs and rules, and we're getting it so that it's at a language where people can understand it, and so we're getting it into that plain language using those guidelines from that manual. Yeah, definitely.
It's not an easy process, though.
I know, but I'm responsible for that. So.
And before I ask Mr. McSpadden for the LFO recommendation, one last thought. This is done partly in jest, but it's really not entirely in jest. Mr. Kahn referred to addressing needs and systems. He said there are vehicles and there are drivers, and then there's going to be vehicles without drivers.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be thinking ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mr. McSpadden.
Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee. In LFO's view, DMV has conducted an appropriate set of assessments and planning activities to date and has regularly reported on program status in a very transparent and timely manner. I want to thank ODOT leadership and staff for that. It's been very nice to have that kind of relationship. DMV has substantially fulfilled its obligations to address 2015 legislatively adopted recommendations and budget note directives. Based on those factors, on the independent third-party quality assurance assessments and the stage gate endorsements from the Office of the State CIO to date, again, LFO does believe that DMV is ready to proceed to the implementation phase of the Service Transformation Program. With that, we have made about six conditional recommendations for your consideration. They're on page 5 of the memo. We do recommend conditional approval of policy option package 110, assuming the funding, spending authority, and personnel resources are made available to ODOT DMV within their budget bill, Senate Bill 5540.
Madam Co-Chair, I move adoption of the LFO recommendation.
Discussion.
Can I just make one comment? Yes. So I'm on the DMV Service Transformation website thing, and one thing, not just for your project, but for other projects, is I've been asking that the stage gate documents be put online, and there is actually a link. I got really excited when I saw it that says 2015-2017 stage gate deliverables, but when I go to that link, there's just like a chart of spending there. So there's, I was hoping that you could put all of the StageGate documents on there. Of course, as appropriate, you have some things that are under contract negotiation, or there might be something that's personal information or something. But I was hoping to have those on the website. So.
Okay. Yeah. We can do that.
Other discussion? Objections? Motion passes. Thank you. And I'm closing the work session. And any other business?
Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee, we're done for today.
Thank you all. Adjourned.
We have a good mood today. The budget negotiations must be going well. Budget negotiations must be going well. We have a good mood today.